From WXXI News, I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Connections. Our connection for this hour was made 25 years ago with the launch of a festival that remains unique to the country and really the world, and it's in Rochester. It's called the Gateways Music Festival, and for now it happens every other year. And while Rochester has a range of music events and festivals, there is nothing quite like Gateways. It's because the festival connects and supports professional classical musicians of African descent. The goal is to bring together musicians from around the country and around the world who are often the only black performers in their home orchestras. Now, on stage, they'll perform in 50 shows during the next 6 days. Gateways runs Tuesday through Sunday. Most of the performances are free. With the kickoff of the newest edition tomorrow, we wanted to welcome a panel to discuss the mission and the challenge. Let's welcome our guests in studio. Lee Kuntz is the president and artistic director of the Gateways Music Festival. Lee, welcome back to Connections.
Good to be here, Evan.
Also with us is Herb Smith, a trumpeter with the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra and a member of the Artistic Programs Committee for the Gateways Music Festival. Herb, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You look fabulous, by the way. We're laughing because Herb thought this might have also had a video component. And he is the most dressed up man at the table. And nobody's going to see it. James Norman is the chairman of the Gateways Music Festival Board of Directors. Welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And we should mention that James is succeeding the late Paul Burgett, and I was mentioning to James before the program began. It still feels jarring to me to say that. It still feels like it happened so quickly, and we lost him so quickly.
Yeah, it did happen relatively quickly. We were just really getting our footing, with having our first professional staff support, and we were getting the board. I would call it Board 2.0. Off and running, and all of a sudden, Paul was taken away. It shocked the organization. So my challenge has been to help the organization get through the mourning process, personally developing relationships with people that he's had relationships, we had relationships for many years. He was around the university as a student and a dean and administrator for over 50 years. So he had deep contacts within the institution, which is one of our key partners. He had deep contacts within the community. He was a music historian. My little bit of music can fit in a thimble compared to, his musical background. But I've been in a lot of organizations and lots of boards, and so I'm hoping to bring my board experience and my leadership experience to help move the organization forward.
And you've been involved with Gateways for some time?
Yes, I started, I'm not sure whether it was 95 or 97. By 97 for sure. Maybe as early as 95 because, my office when I was at ABC was about two blocks down the street from the Eastman. And so I was on the route that our founder traveled. And when she wanted to, she just stopped in and said, I want to see the president. And they would call my office, and I would stop whatever I was doing to, have a conversation with her. And so she got me involved, and I caught her enthusiasm. I have a love for the music, and I have a love for the uniqueness of the Gateways Music Festival.
If I gave you any instrument that you wanted, what could you play the most respectable notes for me on?
Well,
good question.
It would be between a guitar and a trombone. I was a trombonist, but I don't have the trombone lips anymore that I had when I played the trombone.
It's been some time.
He's an accomplished singer.
Yeah,
so that's the instrument.
Yeah, I would sing.
And that's an instrument,
yes,
isn't
it? Yes, it is.
I would say that's an instrument. Don't downplay.
That's right.
Don't downplay your voice.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Gateways Music Festival, and a little bit later in the hour, we'll tell you about the Paul J. Burgett Memorial Lecture Series. It's gatewaysmusicfestival.org, August 6th through the 11th. So 6 days, 125 musicians, 50 performances. And I think 46 of them are free, Lee, something like that?
I think that's the number, yeah.
Okay, so I mean, just
many are free.
A lot of opportunities to participate and some new things to tell you about. But if you've never been And if this is your first experience with Gateways, I'd like Lee to tell you just a little bit about what you aim to do with this festival. Go ahead, Lee.
Sure. Next week, we will host and launch, I believe, without a doubt, the largest Gateways Music Festival we've ever had in our 26-year history. So in addition to the performances that you've mentioned, there are two solo piano recitals, an organ recital, a festival piano recital with all the festival pianists. And we were just told yesterday that we've got so many instrumentalists on the stage that we can barely fit. In fact, we aren't fitting on the stage. That's one of my problems that I'm trying to work out today. So in every regard, this is the largest Gateways Music Festival that we've ever had.
And apart from some of those logistical issues, you feel ready?
We will be ready. We will be ready, yes. I promise that. It's kind of a cast of 1,000. We put together 30 chamber music groups for Gateways. For many national festivals, they bring ready-made groups to that festival. And at Gateways, we put them together. We grow them in-house. We put the sauce in, and we make our own chamber music groups.
Yes.
And so that's a whole process unto itself. And if there's one change in the ingredients, everything changes. And so, the closer you get, things change. And so we're trying to make sure that the sauce is going to be the right sauce, the way that we want it to taste.
Well, I want to get right to one of the core missions and issues that surrounds a festival like Gateways, which is, you know, I'm reading Fred Bronstein in the Baltimore Sun. He raised a question back in March about classical music as a genre. He writes, "How does an art form imprisoned in its own exclusivity survive?" He cites some evidence that the percentage of U.S. adults who have attended at least one classical music event in the last year dropped from 11.6% to 8.8% over a 10-year period. So fewer than 1 in 10, 1 in 9, 1 in 11, I think, Americans are attending at least one classical event. And that's Americans from any background, any classical event at all. And what Bronstein's saying is there's an exclusivity that has kept a lot of people out. That keeps maybe the listening public out at times. But it's kept female composers out. It's certainly kept black composers out. And the number of African-American performers in classical music, you know, some of the numbers vary by fractions, but it's what, 1.8, 1.9% nationally?
Yes.
So let me start with you, Lee, and then I certainly want to explore Herb's experience and his expertise here. But Gateways has been around for how long now?
This is our 26th year.
I think everybody would agree that it's an important mission. But the numbers nationally tell us that it's very hard to be moving, you know, the needle's not moving very much. How do you feel about the mission of Gateways sort of juxtaposed with the reality right now?
Yeah, thank you for that. It turns out that Fred is one of my colleagues from when I worked at the Chicago Symphony, so I know Fred very well. And he's good about tackling and talking about these really difficult questions. I think that Gateways is important in the world in which we live, this classical music world in which we live, because it helps to disrupt the narrative of what it is black people can do and what it is we do. Yes, we can play incredible jazz, like Herb is an amazing jazz player. We can play, you know, and sing R&B and soul and hip hop, but we can also be great classical musicians. And in fact, people of African descent have been involved in classical music since the time of Mozart and Beethoven. So it is as much our music as any other music in the world. So I think that Gateways helps to demonstrate and to show that. And for kids, it certainly can show that there are limitless possibilities for what a person of African descent can do. I can play rap and I can sing rap, I can do that, but I can also play the trumpet in the RPO. Right? Limitless possibilities. But to Fred's point, this the exclusivity is what we've put around the music. The music itself is not exclusive. It's the trappings around the music that have made it exclusive. And if you dig deeper, one of the things that we learned at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra is that one of the biggest indicators of someone who will be a ticket buyer or a purchaser to an orchestra concert is having had an experience playing, learning to play a musical instrument as a child. And so a person who's learned how to play a musical instrument as a child, they might go on to many, many other different kind of fields, but there's something about that experience that makes them more likely to go to a concert. And as we all know, in this country, we see declining numbers of kids who are learning how to play musical instruments. So I think it's all related. It's this cycle. We're not teaching music. We're teaching fewer and fewer kids, and then audiences are declining, and audiences are declining. We have fewer kids. It's this vicious circle. It's this vicious cycle that we've got to find a way to get out of. And I think that for Black kids in particular, and some of our school systems, it's even more dire. Those kids are getting even less than other kids in this country, and that's certainly having an effect on how many musicians that we see of African descent on the stages.
Yeah, so it's probably a little ungenerous of me to say, well, it's been a generation of gateways and we haven't moved the needle. That's putting a lot on one festival and to change the numbers nationwide.
It certainly is.
But what do you see as maybe one or two factors, if you could pick them right off the top, that really would change some of that?
Access and opportunity for music education for all children in the United States. That would be the biggest thing to change. But I do want to say that Gateway's mission is not about diversity. And so we have been very clear about that. There are organizations that are about increasing diversity, but that's not our primary mission.
Fair. So let's, if we could, kind of explore Herb's story, because of all the people in the city, I actually have like a list of people who I can't believe I had never had in the studio talking. And you were on the list.
I think you asked me to be on
well,
the show
you,
once in a while,
you know,
and I couldn't make it. Or
a couple of times. So yeah. It's really great to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
And I appreciate having the time with you now. If we could, let's kind of, before we kind of get into what's going on now and how you see the festival, how you see these kinds of issues that Bronstein's raising, let's talk a little bit about your story and how you ended up in, you know, playing for the RPO. Where did you grow up originally?
I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. And exactly what Lee's talking about, you know, I had music in the fourth grade. You know, you learned an instrument. And that instrument carried me, you know, across the world, you know, and I'm here now. You know, I'm playing in the Rochester Phil. I was in L.A. last week. I'm conducting Rochester Philharmonic late September, you know, and that all stemmed from having the access of education, music education.
Starting in fourth grade, you said?
Fourth grade.
What was the first instrument?
Trumpet.
It was trumpet.
And I just stayed with trumpet the whole time.
And I started in the third grade in Chicago Public Schools.
Right.
Third grade.
It's
everybody.
Interesting. What was your first instrument?
Violin. Unfortunately.
Oh, whoa.
I was a terrible violinist.
Oh, I was going to say, I have a 7-year-old son who's loving violin. Oh.
It's one of the hardest instruments on the planet. It's so difficult. And that's why I became a pianist. Oh, anyway, this is about her.
No, violin is great. I mean, I love like the whole like Pythagorean theorem and how the scroll and all that stuff and how it's the harmonics are perfect,
exactly,
aligned with the universe. Like, that's one of the great things about violin. So that's a good promo for your son.
No, it's making me think, should I find something else here?
That's no, what violin he is great. It's really great.
So when you picked up trumpet in fourth grade, what do you remember about those first experiences picking up a trumpet?
I mean, here you are in the room with like other fourth graders and parents, and the band director plays all the instruments, you know, and he plays the trumpet, he plays the trombone, tuba, flute, and you kind of just listen to them and everyone gets to pick the instrument they want. So I remember looking at the trombone thinking, nah, that's too big, you know, tuba, that's just way too big, flute, too small, trumpet was kind of like, you know, it's shiny. It's right in the middle. It's just right. I liked the sound of it and picked it and just was instantly had a liking to it. Just immediately started playing and was like had a decent proficiency to play. And I haven't stopped playing yet. I keep saying when I stop liking the trumpet, that's when I'll quit. I mean, I just love the instrument.
I remember a very similar experience, listening to someone demonstrate instruments, giving students a chance to think about what you wanted to do. And I was probably a third grader who wanted to pick up a viola or a violin and was frustrated that I couldn't play it, you know, like a high-end fiddler right away. And right. I quit.
Right.
Did you find yourself with the trumpet kind of taken to it pretty quickly? I mean, was it easy?
No, it wasn't easy, but it was just, I don't know, just something about it I liked. You know, it was written in the stars. I don't know. It was just, I just loved it. I mean, my daughter started to play the violin, and I didn't make her practice. Like, my mom always brags, I never made him practice. He just practiced on his own. So it was just a thing for me. So when my daughter played violin, she really wasn't into it. So I just allowed that to be, you know, that wasn't the thing for her. Where some parents get in there and practice, you know, and some people then take to the instrument. But for my daughter, I wanted it to be just a natural thing the way that it was for me.
I was going to ask you if there is sort of a one technique is better for a parent who wants a kid to get into it. In other words, it sounds like you think some kids will take to more of that sternness. You're going to go to this piano lesson. You're going to go to this. Whereas others, if you do that, the second they can pull the ripcord and get out of it, they will.
Right, right. I mean, I know, like, I was in Japan a few years ago with the Eastman Wind Ensemble, and we would do concerts. And in Japan at that time, every kid had to take an instrument. Every single kid. So as a wind ensemble coming into these cities, it was jam-packed with people. We'd come out and we were giving autographs. I mean, it was just so many kids. And when you do that, you throw a huge net. And then the kids that have that natural feeling for it will take to it. And the ones that don't will go away.
And become audience members.
Exactly.
And donors and supporters.
Exactly. Right. Because they've had that experience. They have had that music. And that's exactly what you're saying. But when you're in a situation where there's just hundreds of thousands of kids that are not getting the chance to have that music education, then there are your numbers for why only one and two people are going to orchestra concerts. We are missing the net of kids that may have the ability to play an instrument and therefore also be supporters of music.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when you knew that it could be a significant part of your career and your life?
I didn't know it was going to be a significant part of my career. I just knew I didn't want to quit. So I remember I was in sixth grade. I was going into sixth grade, and I had a chance to go to a math-centered school and then go to a performing arts school. And the math-centered school didn't have much of a music program at all. And I was just like, I just kind of still like the trumpet. I'm not ready to quit it yet. So, you know, the performing arts school has math, right? And so I went to the performing arts school. And then that was like, I really do feel like that was the decision that catapulted me to being the musician I am today.
When you look at the numbers, I mean, this is a clumsy question, but, you know, we're on a difficult subject.
Sure.
I don't know how else to sort of ask it other than, is it harder to be a black musician? You know, do you feel any discrimination? Do you feel anybody who assumed you would have a lower ceiling as a musician? Have you felt any of that in your career?
Musically, I have not felt that. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, and I'm not saying that maybe I was part of that, or maybe I was held back from things because of that, but I never experienced that directly. Going to Eastman, And then getting into the Rochester Philharmonic, I was always the one or the two African Americans in my field, in my trumpet studio. You know, even today, I'm the only African American in the Rochester Phil. And most of the people that come to the Gateways Music Festival are that one or that two and their prospective orchestras around the country. So, again, the whole casting that net to catch the kids that would be in orchestras, we are missing so many. And it's not something, there's some kind of study that says you can't start violin in ninth grade and be a professional violinist. There's like certain things that happen. I'm sure that there's stories of people that have, you know, but like there's certain, like there's, someone said you have to play the instrument for a certain amount of hours before you get to a certain age in order to be a professional musician. So it's like once that's gone, it's gone. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, I think you did. And I'm heartened to hear that you didn't feel either discriminated or even, again, that assumption on the ceiling that no one looked at you and said, are you sure you want to be playing this when, you know, some of the stereotypical things that African-American kids and young adults might be assumed the kind of careers that we lay out for kids. So, like Lee said, I mean, this is partially it's about helping people see themselves in a broader range of possibilities.
Right.
Is it a social justice issue for you?
Yeah, for me, this festival really shows an African-American kid a different path. The perception and the view of African-Americans in America, men especially, there's only a certain amount of paths. I mean, there are always doctors and lawyers, there's that, but like the ones that are paraded on the screen, there's like a few, you know, there's the sports, there's the R&B or rapper or something like that. There's only a few. And to see an orchestra of all African-American players, a child to see that, to me, which is, I'm like, I never saw that when I was growing up. You know, I just never did. And to see that, it's like, wow, I could actually do that. Like, that's my uncle. Like, my uncle looks like that. Like, that's my brother. That's my dad up there playing. You know, so I think that this is something that can open the eyes of African-American kids, but to all people. Like, you know, when President Obama became president, then the thought of, wow, any black man walking down the street, it opens up your eyes to what's possible. Hmm. You know, you don't just see, you know, black man dreadlocks. You see the possibility of a doctor, the president of the United States, a conductor. It just, for the entire country, for the world, it opens that up.
And you mentioned when you are at Gateways, for example, you're going to be having conversations with African-American musicians from around the country, from different orchestras in different cities. And often it's the same kind of a story. One or two African-American performers in an entire orchestra. So similar experience. Is there any added pressure? Is it harder for you? I mean, would it be different for you if there were half a dozen, a dozen African-American?
I think it would be better for me if there were more. I personally feel like I have to hold the torch, you know, like I'm in the orchestra and I want to do good, show my people, you know, not really, but I kind of want to be an example, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of people in the orchestra and they look at me and I'm like their kind of first window into like an African-American man. So I want to be a certain way that can represent, you know, if there were more of us there, then that's less pressure on me. Not that it is, not that I feel pressure. I mean, I've been in the orchestra for so many years, but that's kind of what would be very helpful.
Yeah, no, I mean, we had a conversation recently with an organization that is seeking to increase the number of young black students in the sciences.
Yes.
And talked to some grad students, students who are presenting, students who are in front of large audiences now. And I had some very emotional moments with, you know, these grad students telling us that they sometimes feel like this isn't just me trying to stick the landing for myself and have a, you know,
right.
It's like, if I'm not doing a high level job here, the judgment will be, oh, so that's what the black science
did. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's a lot. That is a lot of pressure.
Exactly.
But you say at this point in your career, you don't think about it as much, it sounds like?
At this point in my career, it's like I've been doing it for so long that you're just comfortable with that. You know, I just, wherever I go, I know that's what it is. So it's just, it's an honor, you know, it's a real honor to do that, you know, to be that person that can represent, and people say, wow, you know, this is great.
Yeah. How long you been with the RPO?
Over 20 years.
Over 20 years now.
Yeah.
You still love it the same way?
I do. I love, well, okay, I'm going to say no, I don't love it the same way. I still love it, but it's different, you know. In orchestras, you play the same pieces a lot of times. So, you know, I'm playing third trumpet on Pictures at an Exhibition a bunch of times. When you come in, oh, we're doing Pictures at an Exhibition, I'm like, okay, I played that. I'm not even going to practice it. I've played that 100 times, you know. So, you know, the first time you play it, like, okay, I'm going to practice this, and I'm going to look at scores. I'm going to listen to, you know, Solti conducted. I'm going to listen to, you know, all these different conductors. And now I'm just like, okay, I played that piece. We're going to go in. But you have to find the love kind of different. It's now, for me, it's more like, how can I play this my best all the time? How can I hone my skill so that I'm playing super efficient? You know, it's a different type of love now for the music.
Well, and I wonder if you're talking about playing pieces that are sort of in some kind of a canon and the classics that you know you're going to encounter.
Right.
That's one thing. I mean, orchestras are going to be playing Beethoven's 3rd, 5th, 9th, forever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right. Just going to happen.
Right.
But is it too narrow overall what orchestras are doing, or have you seen that grow, the overall repertoire?
I think it's definitely narrow. I think it's definitely narrow what orchestras are playing. I mean, I think there are some orchestras now that are opening up and are playing newer music. But again, you're dealing with, I go back to that net, you're dealing with a small group of people that are coming to concerts. You're dealing with people that know certain pieces, and orchestras, you have to play to your audience. You can't just play stuff people won't show. You know, you got to do Beethoven 5. You got to do a Tchaikovsky, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, you have to do Brahms 1, 2, 3, or 4. You know, you have to do Mahler 2. You know, you have to do certain pieces in order for that to happen. That's one of the good things about Gateways, being an African-American-based group. We do a lot of black composers. You know, Florence Price, who from what year was she?
1870s to 1953.
Right, where she wrote symphonies that just aren't very well known. So to do pieces like that, to do new composers, like we're doing a piece called Episodes and done the piece by, like, Amen. These are newer pieces that are written by black composers. This, we can go that direction fully, and people will come to hear those pieces.
In fact, this year, Herb is on the Artistic Programs Committee, and that committee made a decision that the final concert this year would be all composers of African descent. And so we've never done that before. And the only two exceptions were when we brought on Denise Graves as our soloist. To bring her on and not ask her to sing two famous arias would be just craziness, right? So she is singing two arias by Western European composers, but everything else in our program is by a composer of African descent. And that is the first time we've done that in our history.
So let's talk about the schedule on the other side of our only break of the hour. The Gateways Music Festival is coming your way August 6th through the 11th. 6 days, 50 performances. The vast majority are free and open to the public. There are a few ticketed events, and those ticketed events range from about $5 to $15. So remarkably accessible and a lot going on. GatewaysMusicFestival.org. You just heard Lee Kuntz, who's president and artistic director. And Herb Smith, who's a trumpeter with the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, and as Lee mentioned, a member of the Artistic Programs Committee for the festival. James Norman is here, chairman of the Gateways Music Festival Board of Directors. So we're going to dig into the schedule and get you all set for that after our only break of the hour.
I'm Megan Mack. Tuesday on The Next Connections, a conversation about gun ownership with survivors of gun violence. We'll sit down with two local women who lost multiple family members to gun violence. While they both advocate for responsible gun ownership and strong gun laws, they have very different perspectives when it comes to their personal ownership of guns. We explore those perspectives and discuss concealed carry laws in New York State. Talk to you Tuesday.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The Gateways Music Festival, ready to roll here. Gatewaysmusicfestival.org. And I'm gonna let our guests tell you, kind of take you through the schedule, because we can kind of go through the schedule if you want. We can talk about what's new. We should do all of that stuff, Lee.
All right.
But I'm going to follow your lead and how you want to present what we're going to talk about here.
I can talk about the schedule for the next 2 or 3 hours, so you should stop me. But we have a jam-packed schedule starting on Tuesday, August 6th. We're featuring Bob Watt, in a talk titled The Black Horn, which is titled after his book. And Bob is fascinating because he spent 36 years as a French horn player in the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra, and talking about an incredible story. So he'll be talking about his story, and then we'll have a panel of Gateways musicians who all play in symphony orchestras right now, talking about their experiences. And we'll conclude that session with the first of three films. It's called Raw Tuba. And we're doing the film series in collaboration with the Rochester Association of Black Journalists. And this one's called Raw Tuba, and it's about the life of our principal tuba player who grew up part-time homeless in Baltimore, Maryland, which is an extraordinary story. And we conclude the evening after that long day with an 8 o'clock piano recital by Stuart Goodyear, who wowed everybody last year with his Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto with the orchestra in 2017. And this year, he will be playing the Bach-Goldberg Variations.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. For pianists, that's like climbing Mount Everest. That is the pinnacle. That if you can put, and it will be extraordinary because Stuart is playing it. And Wednesday, we've got the festival piano recital with all the pianists in the festival. I think there's 6 or 7 on that recital. A second film on Wednesday, Kinshasa Symphony at the Little Theater, one of our partner organizations. And it's about amateur symphony orchestra in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And these people are playing for the love of the music in situations that I think none of us would imagine were even possible. Thursday, we're featuring Nathaniel Gums on organ. First time we've had an organ in a long, long time. And Nathaniel is just been recently appointed the chapel organist at Yale University. He's an Eastman grad, his doctorate at Eastman, and coming back to perform for us. And then the first chamber music concert on Thursday at Mount Olivet Baptist Church. On Friday, we've got our amazing festival preview that we're doing in collaboration with WXXI and Backstage Pass. So we'll feature the orchestra and some chamber music groups. That's at 1 o'clock on Friday in Kodak Hall. And then Terrence Wilson, who played with us, was that two festivals ago. The second or third Beethoven sonata, an extraordinary pianist, extraordinary. And he'll be performing in a solo recital the entire Rachmaninoff Etude Tableau, which anybody knows, those are some of the hardest pieces to play on the piano, repertoire. And Friday, we conclude the evening with some community performances. One is at City Hall. It's kind of an after-work thing. We've got a couple of chamber music groups playing in council chambers. So instead of deciding big, important things about what happens in Rochester, we've got 2 or 3 chamber music ensembles there playing some really great music. Herb's group, the Brass Collective, will be at Memorial Art Gallery on Friday at 7 o'clock. The Brass Collective, and they're going to be jamming. They do everything from the Pergolesi all the way to,
Duke Ellington,
that's right, and Ray Charles and all of that. So it's going to be an extraordinary performance. And then we conclude Friday with our very first After Hours. So Gateway's musicians playing at Anthology at 10 o'clock on Friday night.
And that's going to be a really good thing.
It's going to be amazing.
There's so many people that are multi-talented,
right,
with classical and jazz, or with spoken word, hip-hop.
Right.
There's just so many things. I mean, I know, like, Fred plays, she plays in New York, and
right,
she plays a lot with
Frederica, Fred.
Yeah, she plays a lot with like, you know, like sometimes you see her playing with someone like Kanye West or something like that. So, like, they have there's a lot of cross musicians.
And Jessica, who plays with Beyonce.
Yes.
And so all of these, right, all of those musicians are getting together, and they're going to be jamming at After Hours Anthology on 10 o'clock on Friday. It's going to be really,
yeah,
really cool.
It's going to be great.
And Saturday, we begin that evening, kind of it's a day before the last day of the festival. We're performing at Hochstein, the second chamber music concert. But we begin it with a film about our featured composer, Florence Price. It's called Caged Bird, The Life and Music of Florence Price. It's at 4:30 at Hochstein School of Music. And then a lecture about the life of Florence Price. And that's been given by Corey Hunter, who, interestingly, is going to be joining the Eastman and the University of Rochester faculty this fall. But he was selected by Paul Brigat and the University and Eastman faculty to take over Paul's courses a year ago, actually before Paul's passing. So we've asked him to be the first presenter on what we're calling now the Paul J. Brigat Memorial Lecture. And on Sunday, we have this extraordinary gala affair, concluding the festival with the Gateways Orchestra and our guest artist, Denise Graves, who is famous around the world for her portrayal of Carmen in the opera Carmen. But she'll be singing with us two arias, one of them Carmen, from Bizet's Carmen, and then two spirituals, which were arranged for her for full orchestra. And as I said, it's the largest orchestra we've ever had. We can barely fit on the stage. In fact, we don't quite fit yet, but we will fit by next Sunday. And it's the first performance that we've had the orchestra playing all pieces by composers of African descent. So it's an extraordinary week.
Wow. I'm going to turn to James Norman and ask you what stands out to you most. What are you most excited about?
I'm most excited about the expansion of our programming. When we went through our strategic planning process a couple of years ago, we talked about increasing the offerings to the community, and so we're doing that at this particular festival. We're very happy to be doing that, and so this is just a indication of things to come in the future, when we hope to have, you know, Gateways performances in large measure in places other than Rochester. Right now, we do Rochester every year. We want to begin to do things annually if we can generate the resources. And one of the steps we'll be taking toward that is to increase the board and engage more people in the board who are not based in Rochester.
Well, looking at different ways you grow and you engage the community, film screenings and Gateways After Hours are new this year. Is that right, Lee?
They are new.
That is new.
Brand
okay.
New, yeah.
Whose idea was that?
It's really a part of the strategic planning process. And, you know, it's really the committees. The Artistic Programs Committee comes up with a lot of these ideas. But as James says, you know, we want to tour Gateways, but we also want Gateways in Rochester to become a destination festival.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I mean, just before I came over here, this woman called. She says she's coming from Chicago. She needs to know how to get tickets. And she needs that. We've never had this kind of thing happen before. So people are coming from out of town to come to the Gateways Music Festival. And I think part of us building out the program is attracting people. You've got to have more going on to bring people from Chicago or from Seattle. And so it's starting to work, but it's a part of the strategic plan.
Well, you know, James just mentioned this, and I think, I don't know if it was 2017 you and I talked about, eventually do we do this every year? Is this what's the growth look like? Ultimately, what's the goal? What's an ideal? Take me to 5 years from now, right? Mm-hmm. So you've had some more time to kind of grow and build what you want to build. What does the festival look like and who's attending it?
Mm-hmm. I think go ahead, James.
Well, the festival happening every year would be one thing that we think is very realistic.
Yep. Which could happen as soon as when, by the way?
Maybe a couple of years.
Okay.
The Youth Institute, which is one of our key components, we hope to expand. This year, it's like a two-day institute. And one unique thing is that we're at the chamber concert at Mount Olivet on the 8th of August, the youth will play with the professionals for the first segment of the program. So that's new. But we hope to expand the Youth Institute and be every other year, minimally, as you know, improvements in the next 5 years.
Sound realistic to you?
Everything is possible. Yeah, everything is possible. I think that in addition to that, we turned away around 200 musicians this year who applied to Gateways, and we weren't able to accommodate them. So we are looking at ways to accommodate all these extraordinary musicians out there who want to be a part of Gateways. So that's also big for us in the future.
Yeah. Well, before we close our conversation for the hour, getting ready for the Gateways Music Festival Tuesday through Sunday. Is that correct? That's correct. 6 days, 125 musicians, 50 performances, and most of the events are free and open to the public, but it is a remarkably accessible event for 6 days. Film screenings, Gateways After Hours, and a lot more, and all of the schedule, gatewaysmusicfestival.org. Tell me a few pieces to flag or talent to flag to listen to.
Certainly the two piano recitals will be outstanding.
Terrence Wilson.
Amazing. Terrence Wilson and Stuart Goodyear are of the two most gifted and talented pianists out there playing today.
And again, performing what?
They're performing on Tuesday, August the 6th at 8 o'clock. Is Stuart Goodyear, and Terrence is playing on Friday, August 9th at 3 o'clock. And then I'd say the final concert will be spectacular this year. Absolutely. Sunday, August 11th at 4 o'clock. And it will be our most user-friendly concert. Yeah. Folks will come to this concert, and they'll recognize something that they can relate to in every single piece.
Yeah.
For example?
Well, Florence Price, Florence Price Third Symphony. If everybody will recognize the tunes, they're from the rich Black culture of African Americans in this country. Open the concert with this piece called Amen. and it's about it's a depiction of the Black church worship experience. Yeah. And then we conclude the performance the evening with Lift Every Voice and Sing. But it's kind of this kind of cinematographic Black Panther film type version of Lift Every Voice and Sing. So you almost want to see, you know, the big screen on the back of the theater wall. But yeah. So it's a really accessible and enjoyable concert programming.
Do you want to flag a couple that you're excited about?
Yes. Well, I mean, he hit the head on the nail on the head when he talked about the pianists. I mean, these two pianists are world renowned. They're not just playing for the Gateways Festival. I mean, they play all over the world. They play with,
yes,
Terrence came and played a solo with the Rochester Philharmonic. He travels with and plays with different orchestras all the time.
And forgive me, is one of them playing Bach? Is that
Terrence
is playing Bach?
Stewart's playing Bach. Terrence is playing Rachmaninoff.
Yeah.
Not to be missed.
I'm making notes here. Which Bach piece?
The Goldberg Variations.
Goldberg Variations.
Yeah. All of them.
Which Rachmaninoff?
Etude Tableau, Opus 39.
Two good things.
The
orchestra concert for sure.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know, for sure. And then I'm just going to throw in a little plug for the Gateways Brass Collective. We do a concert at the Memorial Art Gallery, and it's going to be a great concert.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like it's brass. We do a lot of different stuff. We'll do some classical music. We'll do some Duke Ellington. We'll do some Chick Corea. We'll do a lot of different music. Everyone in the group, that was one of the things, is versatile in jazz and classical. So that, I think, will be another one to come see.
You have a lot of opportunity to take part in Gateways as a music festival. So let me close just by asking our guests to share some final thoughts, and I'll start with Lee Koontz, President and Artistic Director. I mean, this is a lot of work. You are never, ever, to my eye, a stressed person. You are the same. I bump into you in public or on the show. You're always the same person.
Yeah.
Is that because, you know, you've got this great team and the festival is, you know, it's
team.
You said team.
Yeah, right. We have
an army of people doing all the work.
There is an I in team.
So,
really?
How are you not stressed?
You know, though I've been in this role, as James said, since 2016, kind of first professional staff for Gateways, I was a volunteer in this job since 2009. This is my passion. This is what I was put on the planet to do. And so, you know, I look at all of what we have to get done between now and Tuesday as leading us to this place where I think all of us want to see Gateways. I'm also encouraged because while we have a tiny little staff, me and our office manager, there is a core of dedicated volunteers. We have one of them here in the room with us, Dolores, and I see Ruth over there behind the window, who believe in Gateways and its mission and its possibilities as much as I do. And they're working as hard as I do. And so it's great to be able to work on something that has so many people involved in making it happen. So makes it doable.
Herb, is he unflappable? Is he flappable?
He's really unflappable.
But you know what? Herb is on the artistic programs committee, and we sometimes have like 3 and 4 hour meetings. So you've heard me really go off, but only with that group of people, only with you guys.
No, he's cool.
How do you feel on the eve of this festival, Herb?
For me, I play in orchestras every week, and one of the differences about playing in the Gateways is everyone that's there wants to be there. And we're playing from a place of family and love and joy, which if you go to orchestras around the country, some of them, I'm going to be generous, are not playing from that place. So the music sounds different when you're coming from that place. It sounds different when you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to play Tchaik 4 again tonight. What am I doing after that? Instead of, I want to be here. I want to be next to this person. Let's make music together. And that, to me, there are many differences with the Gateway Festival. That is one of the main differences. Mm-hmm. When you hear this orchestra, when you see those players playing, it's a family playing. And that just makes the music just multiply.
The Rachmaninoff last year with Stuart was dance music. It was danceable.
Yeah.
It was that exciting.
That's how everybody talks about Rachmaninoff.
It certainly was in 2017.
The dance break. You ready? How you feel?
Yeah. I'm probably a little anxious because there's so many moving parts to such a huge event. But I'm also very much looking forward to it and very optimistic about it. I think Gateways, is like a big jewel in the crown of arts and culture in our community. And I just want to stress the fact that it is unique to Rochester. This does not happen anywhere else in the U.S. or in the world at this point in time. And I want to encourage people to appreciate the uniqueness of this activity. And I want to thank all the volunteers that have worked along with the staff to bring us to this point.
Have a wonderful week. GatewaysMusicFestival.org. Our thanks to James Norman, Herb Smith, Lee Kuntz. Thank you. I wish you luck, but it's not about luck. You're ready. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a wonderful afternoon, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.